Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Hey, Rihanna, how are you?
Hey, Brandon. How are you?
Oh, never better. Thanks for joining today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I was excited to talk about relationships and trauma. And specifically, I've never talked about this in 470 episodes, the relationship trauma and how it basically affects people, I think, sadly, but I think it'd be fixed for the rest of their lives.
Well, it can, unless you have the mindset to deal with it. Well, the most important thing is to get educated. And what I'm talking about is education that we have never learned in school from our parents, even in a triple master's of psychology. We did not learn this. So it's deeper than the subject of just how to be successful in relationships. There, I could talk to you all day on this.
Well, that's why we're having you on. You're an expert at this. You've been doing it a long time, and you do have a lot of masters in psychology. So could you unpack that a little bit for listeners on what happens? Because I'm a guy, so guys are going to talk differently than women are going to talk among themselves. But I generally find that I think any breakup can be traumatic, if that's the right word, or it can affect you. It's definitely your mindset. But the problem is you're never really preparing for the breakup while you're in the relationship because you're hopeful that that doesn't happen. And then it generally catches you by surprise.
Yeah. Well, both men and women are equally impacted by traumatic or toxic relationships. I work with both men and women, ages 16 to 76, straight LGBTQ, singles and couples. So, I mean, it's not easier on women than it is on men. Trust me. It all goes back to the impact of the original childhood events that impacted your life. And 100% of us are impacted by childhood traumas. Most people think a trauma is a big event like experiencing a rape or a car crash where you lost a limb, something big and catastrophic. But what is little t trauma is ongoing emotional events that happen in your childhood, whether they're in your home or at school or even by a coach in the community softball league. It could be any experiences and, you know, experienced by a child, how they interpret it, what their childhood mind comes up with as a coping mechanism. And then very much they become behavioral norms and patterns that don't serve an adult in their adult life or relationships.
So you think it's that childhood trauma that basically sets the tone and then that drives the relationship as people age. And then that in turn is exacerbated, if that's the right word, or increased because you get older and you're actually sort of in real life, whatever that means, but means you're older and have bills.
Absolutely. It is the beginning of it. And it's funny because on relationship dating sites, you will see every man say must have chemistry. Women don't say it so much. And the reason is men, caveman brain, is driven by attraction. That's okay. Us women have to understand that. The reason that is because men were made to procreate the race. So attraction's most important to them. And they think listing 100 sports is attractive to a woman. So we are driven by feeling safe in a relationship. Who is that man? What is their qualities? What is their career? What is their intelligence level? And why are we driven that way? Because we are the child bearers. We are geared for safety. So that's the most important thing.
You were talking about the difference between the men's drive, or it's not drive, it's just makeup. I mean, makeup as genetically is effectively what this is. I also think, Rhiannon, in today's society, that is not acknowledged or is trying to be redefined.
I'm educating as quickly as I can, Brandon, trying to tell the differences. And so men and women understand each other's needs. That would be important. I mean, education is everything. Of course, understanding what the top 10 traumas are and what you might be bringing into the relationship. healing those traumas before actually going out to date is the most important thing to attracting an emotionally healthy, evolved, and conscious partner. And people aren't taking that time. Instead, they're going from one divorce, outdating, to heal their pain and find someone else. And they're taking all that neediness and baggage and even anger from the prior situation back out into dating world. So there's a lot of insecurity and problems being brought into relationships. So people need to take the time to get emotionally healthy before going back out there to date again.
I think people need to take the time to get emotionally healthy before they have their first relationship. I think that's ultimately like one of the major, I want to talk about, maybe we could talk about what the top three or four traumas that you see regularly that rank high, because probably listeners will maybe that will resonate just from a percentage standpoint. And then we can talk about some resolutions. But I think all too often people get into relationships and they're not secure with themselves. So if you're not secure with yourself, how could you participate in a cohabitation with another human when you haven't even figured out yourself? So you have all these insecurities. And then
that's why there's so many divorces and breakups today, unfortunately. But going into the traumas, because that is the basis of everything, it impacts you in life, love, and business. I think it's important for them to know some of them. And it's hard to just say three or four, because people usually identify with 4 to 6 of them on this list. So, I mean, the first one is growing up with any addiction in the home. And it's not just drugs and alcohol. That's what people mostly identify addiction. We're talking sex, knowing that your parent was a cheater, porn use, gambling, hoarding, spending, eating, gaming, TV watching, workaholism, or being addicted to the computers or your machines at home, or putting your kids on machines instead of working with them emotionally to soothe them. That's number one. Number two is very important. It's called verbal messaging. What did you hear as a child? Did you hear, I'm proud of you, you did great, it's okay you didn't win, I'm still proud of you? Or did you hear put down messages like, you look fat in that, change your outfit, or no, I'm not wasting my money sending you to college? Things like this. Did you hear the words, I love you? It's funny, being part of the baby boomer generation, not very few of us, our parents, said the words, I love you. Number three is any emotional abuse or neglect. Number four is a big one. That's abandonment. And there's two types. There's fault and no fault abandonment. So a no-fault abandonment is if a parent happened to die early, or a parent was deployed to go to war, or if your parent traveled a lot due to work. I grew up, my dad was an FBI, CIA agent. We didn't know that. And I remember asking as a kid, when's dad coming home? And my mom would say in disgust, well, I don't know where he is. And I couldn't understand why not. Well, where is he? So that's a form of an abandonment. A fault abandonment is never being involved in your child's life, or promising you will be there after the relationship breaks up and then barely seeing your child, or breaking your promises to see them. And another one is being emotionally in the home. You're physically in the home, but emotionally absent. As a therapist, I used to hear from kids all the time, I have to go to my dad's and all he does is sit there and watch football. Like the kids don't want to go. They're just in their room on their computers or talking to their friends. So if you have your children, be emotionally present, go to their school activities, these types of things. Trauma seven is emotionally feeling different from kids in other ways, like being bullied. You might have been chubby and heavy and teased for that, or called a nerd, or identified in school as ADHD. And I worked in the schools as a trauma counselor. So kids hated to feel different. Many kids were identified ADHD when they were just coming from traumatic homes. And they were so nervous coming into school, or they were being bullied all the time. Their cortisol was so far up. And when cortisol is up, memory and learning goes down. So that they weren't able to learn. They weren't able to focus because they were so hyper nervous, being in school. Sibling trauma is another popular one. That's trauma eight. If you have a sibling that was known as the golden child, the more handsome one, the star athlete, the star student, and you're always compared to that sibling that made you feel less than. So did the bullying in Trauma 7, or coming out as a gay or lesbian teen and you weren't accepted by your peer group. Number 9 has 2 traumas, family trauma and community trauma. This is an important one. If you grew up hearing lack messages like we don't have enough money to pay the bills, or you grew up in a dangerous area, this impacts people when they want to be entrepreneurs and they need to invest in themselves. There's fear messages of I don't have enough to invest in myself, but they have a $500,000 sitting in the bank. They have more than enough, but their fear is like, I should invest in myself. I'm not worthy of it, or I may not make it work. These kind of messages are fear and lack messages that come from childhood things that you've heard. If you had a parent that was incarcerated, or you're part of a military family, they move every 2 to 4 years. That makes you the new kid in school all the time. And then the other part of 9 is community trauma. And this is impacting all of us now with the global pandemic of COVID, inflation in the USA, and our Mother Nature events, our floods, fires, hurricanes that wipe out communities at large. And then number 10 is mental health issues in mom and dad. Very often they didn't go to counseling, so we have to guess. But the 2 most difficult for children to navigate is bipolar and borderline personality disorder. So borderline is erratic moods. When they're good, they're great. When they're bad, they're horrid, and the child never knows what they're going to get. And bipolar is manic depressive. So depression can show up as anger or checking out emotionally. And manic, people think that's the high and happy phase. That could be a spending spree, but then next month it goes to depression when you can't pay your bills. So these types of things that kids grow up under, they develop, like I said, these coping mechanisms that then no longer serve them when they're an adult. So we have to break those habits and those norms and have them think and be and act in different ways so that they have successful relationships.
Well, that's a very exhaustive list. And I tend to feel like basically, I mean, what percentage of people haven't had some version of one of those 10 things?
Well, it is proven in 2021, 100% of us have childhood traumas. So what are you taking into the relationships? And then as their coach, I have to decipher what is the severity levels of each trauma. Those people you said you were interested in learning about narcissism, sociopathy, and psychopathy, they have 8, 9, or 10 of these traumas and with severity levels at 9s or 10s. So most people aren't on the severity level of the list, but what coping mechanisms did they come up with? For example, how does it show up in relationships? If you're jealous and controlling, that's usually because of trauma 2, hearing messages you aren't good enough, or trauma 7, feeling different in some way. You didn't measure up to your peers, or you were bullied by your peers. These 2 in combination can lead to jealousy and control. If you had abandonment issues, again, no fault of your own, something was going on in your household, you can tend to be codependent. And also get into a pattern of what we call RRS, relationship repetition syndrome. So that's someone who's in a toxic relationship. Their conscious mind says, this is not good for me. I have to break up. But their subconscious need for, but this is love. This is, you know, at least I feel wanted and loved by somebody. So they break up, then they get back together and break up and get back together. That cycle usually goes on, according to research, an average of 7 times until that victim feels strong enough to break out of this toxic relationship. One that women often do, and some of my men, is called people pleasing. This is a pattern that happens when you grow up with a very difficult parent. They could have been alcoholic or very authoritative, controlling, angry, punishing parents. That to please or appease that parent, you have been a people pleaser. An example of this is a daughter who might have had an alcoholic mom. And so she woke up in the morning and got the kids ready for school, made the lunches, got them out to the bus stop and was overdoing just so that parent wouldn't be screaming at her and her siblings. And then that became the pattern that I hear as a married woman. And I've had this example. I do everything for my kids and my husband to show that I love them, and I get nothing back, you know, and she's burnt out and exhausted and resentful and angry because she's overdoing and they just got lazy and do nothing for her. So these are just some of the patterns. Perfectionism comes out a lot in men. Blaming behavior, where they blame everyone else and can't accept responsibility. Anger, addiction patterns. So these are just some of the side effects of unhealed childhood trauma.
Well, how do you get on the healing path? Because basically everybody who's listening probably can identify one of this, and the research says 100%, that's a lot. I hesitate to say fix this, right? As that means that you did something wrong. A lot of this just happens of no fault of your own. And basically, if we don't train this, it's just going to keep going on and on and on. You look at your parents when you get older and you're like, wow, not quite as like, there's some things there that really you didn't see because you couldn't see because you didn't even understand what you were looking for or understanding what you were seeing, but it's just going to perpetuate itself. So how does someone who's listening to this get better?
Well, thank you for saying some of those things, because the research shows childhood trauma does go through at least 3 generations. It is also shown to change the DNA expression in those that were Holocaust survivors, thinking of what their grandparents might have gone through in the concentration camps. They have done research with the offspring 3 generations low, showing high anxiety, high startle response, and changing the DNA expression. So it's really important that we change this, you know, we heal this within ourselves. And when I was starting to do this research, childhood trauma was not talked about. And I have a triple master's in clinical and counseling psychology. It was not talked about. I went deep into the research after I found that I had 2 love relationship traumas, and asking, why am I attracting people that are not emotionally healthy? I didn't understand it. So, and I was a therapist by then, you know, and there was nothing in our DSM-4 manual at the time I was doing the research to explain childhood trauma. So the research was fascinating. That's why I started talking about it and created the childhood trauma checklist, which you just heard in 2012, to help everyday people identify, yes, I went through this. Wow. Because childhood trauma is not our fault, right? But you can't change what you don't know or understand. And I wanted to understand how to have an emotionally healthy, evolved, and conscious relationship. That was super important to me. So the research is what helped me. And then that went into my number 1 best-selling books, Live and Love Beyond Your Dreams. Got up to 400 pages in Love Beyond Your Dreams and said, I have to make some notebooks because the research kept coming. And it was fascinating to me. And I knew I had to take the message to the world. And that's when I went from therapist to coach, because I could help people globally as a life coach and not as a therapist. I'm only licensed in the state of Florida. So I was very limited in what I could teach in the state of Florida. So I just found it so fascinating. And then, you know, I found out all the life areas that childhood trauma impacts. There's 7 life areas. We're talking physical health. One of the big studies was done by the Kaiser Permanente group in San Diego with overweight people, and it went back to their childhood trauma, why they were unhealthy or sickly or kept weight on. They also found there were sleep disorders attached to this, eating disorders, poor immune function like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, which is Epstein-Barr virus, a shorter lifespan, cardiovascular disease, and all kinds of other stress-related illnesses. And then the emotional area, there's 7 life areas. So this is number 2 is emotions, difficulty in controlling your emotions, trouble recognizing them and being able to communicate through your issues, which we call empowered communication, that was lacking. Shame and guilt, excessive worry is under the emotion, feeling helpless, having a very negative mindset. Then relationships is category number 3. So attachment issues, poor understanding of social interactions, not being able to attached or having fears around relationships, being too needy or too dependent, having abusive relationships or entering into relationships that were abusive. Then we have the mental health aspect, which is category 4. My clients that come to me usually have high anxiety. This is a sign that your childhood trauma has not been healed. Often bouts of depression, negative self-esteem or self-image, sometimes PTSD, events that happen in these traumatic relationships. I certainly went through PTSD symptoms with some of the traumatic things that were given to me in my traumatic relationships. For example, the first man I married stole $200,000 from my mother. Little did I know, I had a sociopath on my hands as the man that I loved. You know, no remorse, never an apology. That is a sign of a sociopath. They do what they want to get what they want without remorse and never apologizing. You know, I've waited 40 years. I still have not heard an apology of, I'm sorry, you know, what that did for you. Because I then took on that debt. It took me 16 years of my life and working 5 jobs as an adult single mom to pay that person, my mother, back because it was the right thing to do. Another category is behavioral. So social withdrawal, aggression, poor impulse control, very active. These are the folks that usually have ongoing sexual affairs on their partners without remorse. And then the other two categories are applying to children, like cognition, the impaired readiness to learn, language delays, smaller brain size, impaired stress response, and trouble learning. So being that I was in the schools from every grade level, kindergarten through college, I was working with those emotionally upset kids to calm everything down using things like music therapy, behavior modification charts, finding their empowered voice, learning to negotiate differences with kids that bullied them. So it was interesting to see how well even elementary level kids was responding to trauma healing tactics that I used and skills.
So is there hope?
That's what I do. I heal all this stuff.
How long does it take?
According to everything I've learned, I am a licensed mental health counselor, but I'm also what's called a CCTP level 2, which is advanced certified clinical trauma professional. So everything in those courses says ideally it takes time that I have 6 months with my clients. Now, I also train over 4 months, but ideally I have somebody practicing all their skills that they're learning to break the behavioral patterns and norms for 6 months.
That sounds too quick. Is that really possible?
Yes, but it's like having a scar. So if you have a bad scar on your arm, it doesn't totally go away. You know it's there, but it barely impacts you anymore. I use a lot of mindset. I also use holistic mind, body, spirit techniques. So body to treat the body and the brain. I have vitamin therapy. All my clients do meditation. Because meditation is proven in science and quantum physics to lessen anxiety, depression, lower cortisol levels, which is your fight, flight, freeze response, lower blood pressure, increased focus, dopamine and serotonin levels, which is your high and happy chemicals. So even my elementary kids were meditating in my office to lower those cortisol levels. It's funny, the teachers would say, what are you giving them drugs down there? They come back so calm and peaceful. These acting out kids that were the problem kids, they were my kids, my students in the school. So meditation is a very important part of the process of healing the brain and the body. So we look at everything holistically, and then they learn a lot of mindset tools and different ways of thinking and being. And to learn to live consciously, meaning they think about everything they do, say, write, text before they do it. So there's different strategies for my singles when they're going out to date and for my couples when they're coming to me from traumatic relationships. With couples, I have to treat 3 entities, partner A, partner B, and the relationship. They have to each understand their own childhood traumas and that of their partners so that when each other is triggered, they know how to calmly and lovingly and supportively talk through an issue and work as a team.
That just sounds like a lot of work.
It's not easy, but that's what I do.
You could do it in 6 months, but from my experience, the people have to be at a place where, in order to do the work, you have to be at a place where you're willing to do the work and you've accepted what you have. And in my experience in life, that just takes a really long time for somebody. I mean, people will say, oh my God, Brandon, I really want to get better, but they don't really, it doesn't, they may want, the intent may be there, but the action does not match the words. So, and I think it's because it's so painful. This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years experience in the real estate and lending space, and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know, because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. Now back to the show.
Well, it's not really painful, Brandon. What is painful is what they've already been through. So two or three toxic relationships and they're tired of it and they want to heal and come to relationship differently. They want to know what is going wrong. As a coach, we work as a team and it's really easy. They fill out worksheets like check marks, 1 to 4, short answers. And then from what they say to me is now I know how to treat them. I know the skills that they need. So it's really quite easy. And they feel different very early on in the first 7 to 10 days with the vitamin therapy that I'm using and the meditation. So they love it, actually. They love feeling better. They love feeling different. They're tired of ruminating over that person that did them wrong and they can't change their past, but they're stuck there and they're stuck in the anxiety and the depression and the fear of going out and dating again. What if I get another sociopath? I mean, I know what that feels like. I've been there, but I am very lighthearted. There's a big part of spirituality and faith. And it feels great when you're out there really enjoying your life and meeting all kinds of people that could be potential partners. And then the education kicks in, knowing the questions to ask, being able to decipher, oh, this is emotionally healthy or this is not. And I can give you an example of that. There is a woman like 60 years old, one of my clients, she's going out dating. She had a couple very traumatic relationships. Now she's armed with all the empowered skills that she needs to date with conscious awareness. So she says he was very handsome, very polite. He pulled out the chair and offered her a drink and then offered her something to eat. And they're having a great conversation. And one of the questions she knows to ask, and it's not like it's in an interview, it's a conversation, is, you know, so tell me, are your parents still living? Because she's 60, you know, and are they here? Or are they where you grew up? And he goes, no, my dad's died a while ago, but my mom's here in a retirement home. She goes, oh, well, how's she doing? He goes, well, you know, if I didn't have to pay the bill, I'd be a lot happier that I didn't have this burden in my life. So it was very negative in how he spoke about his mother and saying, well, is she bad off or how's she doing? He goes, well, she was an alcoholic her whole life and really critical and nasty. And she's just hanging on. So it was just very negative. And my client knew that this mother-son relationship was never healed. She goes, oh, well, that's a shame. How was your dad? Was he the kind and loving one when you were growing up? Because, well, he was an alcoholic too. But at least when I was 13, he stopped drinking. And he was very remorseful about it. He kind of took me under his wing. We'd go camping together and fishing. And that ended up being a nice relationship. So you could see that that part healed. But in my Love Beyond Your Dreams book, I talk about the 19 personality types that could break your heart. So one of them I called a mother hater. And she knew that if that wasn't healed, that he could be a very demanding man on his woman. Nothing would be good enough, very critical, So she decided, yeah, you know, he's a nice guy, but I'm not going to date him again. So he called the next day and said, I really enjoyed meeting you. I'd like to have another date with you. And she goes, well, I'm sorry. I don't think we're quite a match, but I wish you the very best. And he starts yelling at her. What do you mean? I only did the right things. You know, how could you not want to date me again? And she goes, well, I'm sorry. I don't take people yelling at me on the phone. I'm going to hang up now. Because she didn't, you know, she didn't need to give him any answers. But she hung up and she laughed and she goes, thank God, I know what exactly is going on. So that's an empowered way to date. She goes, otherwise I would have been like nervous. I probably would have had another date because he was charming and there was chemistry. But we date beyond chemistry. You know, yes, there has to be an attraction factor. You're eventually going to make love to this person, but it's not just about chemistry. It's about everything else. We call chemistry the icing on the cake. What is the cake? That's what my clients and I want to know. What is the cake? What is the substance of that person? Have they done their healing work? We're not blaming them for having childhood trauma, but have they done the healing work that is really important for an emotionally healthy, evolved, and conscious relationship? And if not, that's the work that people need to do to have healthy and happy, sustainable relationships.
How many people do you actually think do the work, though? Because I like the idea. I mean, you hesitated to say it was an interview, but it actually is an interview. Let's just be... When
you're dating, yeah, you're going to know about... Yeah, we have 24 questions that we ask our clients, our dates, I'm sorry, when we're out dating. That helps us to know and date one or two if this is someone that is right for us or not.
Could you share one or two of those questions?
Well, you heard the first one.
Right, I heard the first one.
You can say, so what are some of your happiest childhood memories and what's like one of the worst? That's an easy question. So a happy one could be winning the football game, you know, or the championship game. And a negative one would be, you know, I was horribly bullied when I was a kid. And then, you know, you say, oh, well, that's a shame. Why were you so bullied? And, you know, it's not that it's necessarily, I mean, I was horribly bullied too, but it's not such a bad thing if you hear, well, you know, I was so smart, I was called a nerd. So I always excelled in my academics. And he grew up to become a doctor, which is great. Let's say someone like that, because academics is our accolades and we all need to have a sound ego. We all need to be proud of who we are and our career path, right? But then that could have meant that he wasn't very confident when it came to his own self-esteem. So he may be a little backward when it comes to dating or shy when it comes to women, because he never had that ego of also a good-looking, attractive man, you know. So it really depends. It's a combination of questions that you have to put together, but you will know, is that someone? If you hear like another woman heard on the first date, the guy say, well, you should know I really need a lot of sex. Well, to her, that was a huge turnoff. Well, all men like sex. We know that. We get it. But don't tell us that on the first date. That's the last thing we want to hear. So there's just things that are said that we are very consciously aware of. If this is an emotionally healthy person or someone that we would choose not to date again.
I'm just laughing. I mean, yeah, I can, I guess some people are honest, but I guess your point is everybody knows that. So should you be doing that if someone's out there single? Listening to this, should you be doing that on the first date?
What, just asking questions, having a conversation?
Yeah, like going through that interview.
It's not an interview. It's having a conversation.
Okay, it's a conversation.
You know, you would ask somebody, so what's your career? That's a normal
question. Well, I'm taking responsibility. It would be an interview for me because it's effectively an interview conversation, whatever it is, to getting to know one another. But you're going through a checklist of questions. I will share with you. When I went on my now wife, or not now wife, we dated for a long time, but we've been together 27 years. So I think I get to say that I'm an expert. I think. I mean, it's a healthy relationship to stay together for that long and get build companies and go through it. It's a lot of work. So I'll say that. On the first official date, my wife said, hey, do you want kids? And I said, I'm from the East Coast originally, and the East Coast tends to be more traditional. I call it the original 13 colonies. And it is. It's a very...
I grew up outside of Philly, so...
Yeah, so I'm from Baltimore. I mean,
okay,
in Maryland. It's not good or bad. And I'm not knocking it. It just, that is a different culture than here where I live in California. I mean, it's just completely different. It's different in Texas. It's different in Montana. It's different in Washington. So anyway, and she is from California, but she said, hey, do you want kids? And I was like, yeah, well, yeah, sure. She's like, well, listen, is that a hard thing? And I was like, I don't really know. Like, I'm not even in this space. She said, listen, if you want kids, let's eat lunch, share a conversation and move on, because I don't. And yeah, that was a conversation, but it was, Yvette had her checklist and rightly so, right? Like, good.
Yeah. It's really important. If a younger person wants kids, that should come out on the first date. And yeah, because that's a very important once, especially for a woman, whether she wants kids or does not. And the man as well, you have to know, do you want kids or do you not? And when I work with younger people, they should ask that on the first day, because why waste anyone's time? It's not about chemistry. This is facing a future together. Do you want kids or not? If a woman does, and he says, kind of like you, well, I don't know, maybe, that's a no. If he says, like my daughter's husband, I couldn't imagine my life being happy without being a dad. Yeah, I definitely want to have kids. I want to be an active dad. I want to be their coach. And that's my son-in-law, Charles, who is their coach to my two grandsons over there. So that was a definite yes. And it's important that you know that. That was something that would have made her life happy to be married and have an active father in her children's lives. So yeah, I think these questions are important. That's the whole purpose of dating, to see if that person aligns with your wants, needs, and values.
Yeah, I basically took it as an opportunity. My first reaction was, I've really never heard that before. So what does she know that I don't? Or what did she think through that I didn't? And I'm sure I would have been happy with kids, and I'm happy where I am. Like, I'm not looking at that, but I took it as an opportunity. And I think maybe people can, is to say, what does that person know that I don't? Like, maybe I didn't think that through. Maybe I'm just a function of the society I grew up in, which I'm not even thinking about, or my awareness is very low.
That's unconscious. Yeah. Just unconscious dating. I'm just here to hang out kind of thing.
Or, hey, that's what we do. We go to high school, we go to college, we get a career in our hometown, and then we have kids and we send the kids to the same high school. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that is a belief system that you could easily adopt without ever having thought it through. And that's how I took it. So,
yeah, well, we call that unconscious dating. And the goal is to be a conscious dater. Know what you want. Know what you want for your future. For example, if I were out there dating, I don't like snow. I don't like skiing. And if the guy loves skiing, he should have a partner that loves skiing. That's not going to be me. I want to do cruises. I live in Florida. I love sun. And that's more my match. I love dancing. Must love dancing, because I could imagine just sitting home all weekend and doing nothing when dancing is my thing. So yeah, you got to know what you like and what you want. And dating with that conscious awareness is important.
So let's just unpack that for a minute, because that's easy for us to say in this conversation. You've got to know what you want. But most people don't know what they want at 21, 25, 30, 45.
I always did. I think most women do. Maybe men are floating through and not knowing what they want. I don't know. But most women do know. Like, I wanted to be married and be a young mom. I also wanted a career in broadcasting, which I had. I also was doing the model and talent industry and ended up with an agency at 26. So I know exactly where I was going. I think women do. And I think they want a man that knows what they want as well. Because otherwise, it's not just about what you look like. That's chemistry. Like, who are you? What are your goals, your dreams? What are your desires? You know, we want to know that.
Yeah, I think that's easier said than done. I know a lot of women friends who, I guess here's my thought on that. I thought that I would have kids. And right, I'm just using this as a framework because it's me and I'm not using anybody else and I'm not picking on anybody. But that thought was given to me in this unconscious behavior. Your behavior could have been, oh, I want that because it represented something, but maybe that's not what you really wanted. So like, this is confusing. And I guess where I'm really getting at is this is hard stuff. This is not easy for a listener out there. I think it could come across as, hey, you've had trauma. You got to figure out what you want and then go through this. And I'm just offering that it's not quite that simple. And if your expectation is that it could happen, that you could be, air quotes, healed that quickly, that can cause anxiety. Because I've had programs where I've gone through, and not any type of program, like even school, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm ready yet. Like, I don't know all this. Now, in some of those things, I was ready, and it was a confidence thing, and that those people said just threw you to the wolves, literally, in some of this training. And it turned out that you were ready, you did have it, and then you built confidence, and those things did help. But I think you would agree, wouldn't you, that it is hard work. Like, it's not going to be sailing through there. It's going to have to do some introspection. And bringing up, I think, you know, one of the things that struck me you said was really insightful is people don't have the pain now. They have the pain they had, but you almost have pain in the present because you have to relive that pain or at least remember that pain to acknowledge it, to fix it. Would you agree?
You're not reliving the pain. You are talking about it. And that's when we do techniques about, like, for example, rewriting the story. Well, what was the story? So, for example, my mother never said the words, I love you, to any of us five kids. So by the time I was married, pregnant with her first grandchild, I said, Mom, why don't you tell us kids you love us? She goes, well, you know I do. And I said, no, the words, I love you. She goes, well, those aren't words I ever heard. Now, I was now learning about generational trauma, and she didn't. She goes, I grew up in the Great Depression. It was all about survival and work hard, right? So that's what she taught us five kids, work hard, make sure you have money coming in. That was her way of showing love. So I had to understand, like, she didn't do it to hurt me intentionally. She did it because she did not know how to say the words, I love you. So I was very kind and loving in this conversation and saying, well, it'd be really nice for your grandchild to hear the words from grandma that I love you. And I want to grow up my kids to be very confident and feeling that they were very much loved. And Mom, you know, hopefully one day you'll feel comfortable to say it, but I'm going to keep telling you that I love you. So then maybe that will feel comfortable for you to say it back. You see, so this is techniques that they learn. And very often, once my clients learn their healing, they do go back to the difficult parent and find ways to heal that. And they're looking at their trauma in a whole different way. It used to be my mom so mean, but now it's like, I understand why my mom was not a hugger, kisser, saying, I love you. She never got that. It wasn't comfortable for her. So we have to understand and rewrite the story. And this is where spiritual forgiveness comes in, right? And us being more evolved, meaning being our highest and our best selves. Like, we can spiritually say, you know, my mom worked really hard to love us five kids. My dad wasn't home often. Wow, as a mom, that must have been really hard not to have much love herself and then try to give us five kids love when it was a difficult time. You know what I mean? So rewriting the story lets us find empathy and forgiveness. Once I knew the childhood trauma work, I looked at my husband, my first husband, the father of my kids, and say, wow, he was horribly bullied by his father. Nothing was ever good enough. So when the father went and said, go get this money from your wife's family, he did everything in his power to make it happen to please the difficult father. So maybe the father would love him and be proud of him. Well, that didn't happen. And then he lost the marriage. Because I could no longer trust someone who frauded my family. So, you know, it's these patterns, but I could have forgiveness knowing his horrible bullying that he went through from his very narcissistic Greek father, okay, who was demanding and controlling and never could say a good word about him. So it helps you understand your life and find empathy, and then you heal that and say, okay, I don't need to move that with me anymore. Forward. I can deal with that. It happens. I can put the spiritual forgiveness around it. Now I'm open heart, open mind, living in the present, ready to create the future that I desire. So it's not like the scar didn't happen. It doesn't just go away. It did happen. But then I look and I say, well, I took my pain and made it my purpose and my passion. And now I'm helping other people around the world heal those pains that they just keep feeling stuck in. They're still angry. They're still resentful. They're still afraid to go out and date again. You know, that's the part that I heal to help them move forward in life or love.
Yeah, I think another important thing you just said is sometimes just understanding, like you just used the example with your ex-husband. If you understand that, you may not like that and the implications weren't happy or very joyful to you, but at least you do understand it. And if you can forgive that, and I guess that's important, you know, if you don't, there's some element of spirituality, whatever religion, right? Like it just doesn't matter, because if you don't wrap all this in that, it'd be hard, because you could be so angry just to forgive people, and forgiving people.
But anger does you no good, right? I mean, the goal is to feel happy in life and joy and bliss and love what you do and have your open heart, open mind to finding love again, even friends that you love. Some people have a hard time making friendships. So we look at every life area and where are they struggling? And then we go back to put the puzzle pieces together of why they're struggling. Let's say the business person, because it does impact you in business, as I mentioned. Let's say it's the entrepreneur that wants to be a coach, for example. And like me, I had to invest money to learn how to be a global coach because I was just a therapist in the local office. It's like, wow, how do I go global? Even though my daughter is a very successful life coach, she was too busy to teach me and out in California. So I had to take this responsibility on myself and learn. So I invested in 12 coaches, which was quite a lofty investment, but they all paid off. And I knew I would do the work and I knew I would be successful, but that's my confidence and mindset work. So many people say, what, a coach for a year to learn business investment is $85,000? I'm not buying that. Rihanna, you could buy two cars with that. I'm like, I don't need two cars. I need to get out of this therapy office and the insurance system and be a coach and charge what I deserve and go global with this message. That was my passion. That was worth the investment. So even though I grew up with a lot of lack messages, my mom there, you know, we don't have the money for this. We don't have that. I had to fight those. I had to heal those lack messages and say, I am worth it. I know I'll do the work and I know I'll be successful. That's mindset. So we do a ton of mindset work. You know, it's like face the fear and do it anyway and know that you can have a positive response, have that faith that you can do what you desire. And a lot of business people only grow so far and then stop due to underlying fears or subconscious messages that they can't make it. Or the person that stays in their 9-to-5 job and hates it, but they're afraid to move on because there's some security to that weekly paycheck or whatever it is, that they're afraid to move on and really have the life they desire. So they stay stuck in that unhappiness, hate the job, come home feeling miserable. And, you know, what happens at work impacts the relationships. What happens in the relationship impacts you at work. So they both have to be copacetic and a happy place for you, right? So I have to look at everything when somebody comes to me and see where is their concerns and their issues and what type of joy do they want in their life. And let's make that happen.
You mentioned that you help people throughout the full range of the age spectrum. Do you find people earlier in life more so coming to you, or is it equal throughout people in their 20s? I mean, in the teenage years, that's just tough. I mean, you got like so many things going on. You got like chemicals that you can't control. You've got your brain. I mean, your brain isn't even fully functioning until you're 25, depending on your man or a woman, give or take a year or two. You don't even know. I mean, looking back, I'm like, yeah, that made total sense. I had no idea what was going on, really looking back, as it relates to relationships, girlfriends, any of that sort of stuff. But
well, I have kids age 16 and up because I'm totally worked by the internet. I don't have a private office anymore. I took children when I had an office. but I feel they could be responsible with a computer and the parent can monitor their sessions. But mostly I see those really wanting marriage and a family, and a lot of women, but I've had men, they're just coming across players and nobody wants that significant marital relationship. So I work with people there. So that's age 28 through 40. And then I work with those 40 to 65. My oldest client's 76, but they want marriage or an exclusive relationship that's healthy. They have had two or three toxic relationships. They can't figure out what they're doing wrong. They've read every self-help book. They're on all the podcasts, mine included, yours, you know, listening and trying to get the answers. But it's not until I work with them one-on-one can we really heal what's going on for them. And then they go on to have, I love to hear my clients' stories of all their engagements and their marriages and my young people having kids. And because I've been doing this 23 years now. So I really love seeing their success stories. That's what brings me joy. But yeah, you know, it's a process, but I do get people of all ages, both men and women.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I learned is that I laughed when you said they've read every self-help book and everything. I mean, the truth of the matter is the answer isn't in the book. But I will say this, that process appears to be very important to give you motivation to actually face the issue. Because when you're reading all those books, some are not very good and some are okay. And generally the message is, I mean, spoiler alert, the message is pretty much the same in general. We have not reinvented, other than maybe like this idea that you can use drugs and things like that, psychedelics and things, and have been proven to sort of make breakthroughs, maybe because it helps you let your guard down. But
I've heard both pros and cons with some of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had a friend tell me recently, he was on the show and he's like, you know, you should do psychedelics. It could unlock so much more. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like maybe, but I've already done the work. You know, I mean, that doesn't plague me. I don't mean plague me. Not as if it's a plague, but it drags on people, right? These things, that's your backpack. That's unfortunately you're going to bed with the backpack and waking up with the backpack. I emptied the backpack. It doesn't mean that you're healed or whatever. But I guess where I was going with that is I think it is important to read all the self-help books and keep doing that. And because that eventually something will happen. You'll either say, oh my God, I've done the last Tony Robbins thing I'm doing and I'm going to do it. Cause that's really what it takes, right? You're laughing too. Cause you know that is.
You have to do it personally. I mean, I read a ton of books, but when I encountered love trauma, there wasn't one book out there on it. And that's why I wrote Love Beyond Your Dreams, got up to 400 pages. And I'm like, I can't keep writing in this book. It's too big. So it was the number one bestseller on Amazon called The Guidebook to Love. And I started out with, here's the personality types that can break your heart, because I wish I knew that before I got married. You know, and then how to heal from that. And then if you're dating, what to look for. And part four is, what is the emotionally healthy relationship? So it's all in one book. That's what I wish I could have found. And I must have probably put 350 psychological journals and other books that I read as references into that book. So that was my frustration, not getting any answers from therapists about what happened to me and how do I heal this? And this is love trauma. Well, it's not in the books. There is no such thing as love trauma. It's like, well, yeah, I'm experiencing it. So I just wanted those answers. So I had to get them for myself. And then I started teaching my clients and then developed this trademark system that does heal both childhood and love trauma. So that was my journey.
Well, as we wrap up here, I want to end on some sort of action that someone could take, because Rihanna, here's my gut. Someone just got to the end here of the last half of this episode and said, oh shit, I am already in a relationship that's not going to work and it's not going to work and I'm going to need to get out. Do you have any sort of mini toolkit to get out of the relationship? Because it's one thing to recognize you're in one. It's another thing to recognize that it won't work. It's another thing to get out of that situation.
Well, I don't have a toolkit that you can buy or anything like that. I work with the individual, especially if there's children involved. The number one thing is safety. My Penn State roommate was murdered by her boyfriend. So I take abusive relationships extremely seriously and make sure my clients are very safe. If they come to work with me, this is something that we work on as a process over time. Don't do something fast trigger if it's a dangerous person. Plus, we want to safeguard the mental health of your own children. I do work with people leaving toxic relationships. So get professional help. That's most important. As a coach with my diamond clients, something like that, they have text access to me. As a therapist, I'm not allowed to have text access. So get the support system where you have someone you can reach out to on a regular basis as this is going down. That's the abusive thing. If you're not sure if it could work, then get help for you two as a couple. Come into couples coaching. It's called Relationship Rescue, the program I have for coaching for couples. If you want to try and work it out and your partner won't come to coaching, I have saved marriages just by working with the one person coming in, because I tell them what to say, what to do, how to act differently. And when one person changes, the whole relationship dynamic changes. And if that person refuses to change, you have the strength, the courage, and the knowledge to move on and be a successful single and get out there and date successfully. So there's all different types of where you're at stages. I work with all of them. So the important thing is reach out for help. And Brandon, we are putting free gifts out for all our listeners too. The two reports is one, how to identify a toxic relationship. The second report is how to have emotionally healthy, evolved, and conscious relationships. So make sure, you know, you just get that from the links. And if certainly if I can help you out right now, there's a special promotion on my website for a Life and Love Transformation Discovery Session, which is 90 minutes with me in a private session where I look at using six simple assessments. One is a childhood trauma checklist and what's going on for you today and putting those puzzle pieces together and helping you have a strategy to move forward in life. So you want to look at that. Something else I want to encourage your people. One lesson my dad taught me when I was very young. He said, "Hun, if you have the 5 D's for success, you can do anything in life." And this is a time when I asked to go to counseling and I was not allowed by my mother. She said, "No one in this family will ever go to a counselor." So I said, in my defiance, then I will grow up and become one. So that was my putting my foot in the sand and saying, this is what I'm going to be. But my dad was giving me these comforting words, and I have expanded it to the 8 D's doing this work. But the first thing is decide what you want and make sure that's important than anything else. And no one will change your mind. Make it a firm decision. Second is the desire to do it. So doing the research, setting yourself up for success, having the decision, then the desire to go for it. Dedication means doing the work, knowing the outcome will be there. Be dedicated to the process. Determination, it's going to get hard. Nothing's really easy in life. Something that's really rewarding, you have to do the steps. There's going to be great times and difficult times. Just be determined to keep pushing forward. Devotion is the spiritual devotion that it needs, the faith that you will make it and the faith that you can get what you desire in life. Dare to dream. And he said, and babe, dream big, you know? So I always have that. What are my dreams? What are my goals? I have a goal setting system I have with my clients, make sure they're reaching their goals and their dreams. The next one is drive, pushing through those 12, 14, 16, 18 hour days when you're on a goal and you want it finished. That's like when I was writing my online school, I was working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. Then I had to drive because I had the vision to complete. And then the last is the discipline. So those are the 8 D's for success that I wanted to leave with your clients. And knowing that the third issue is knowing that both childhood and love trauma can be healed. You just have to believe in that and reach out for the help. And I describe it like a rainbow. I was on that one side of the rainbow, is that you can't change what you don't know or understand. That's a very frustrating place to be. But as you're getting the education, you're going up over the rainbow. That's the educational curve. You're getting stronger and stronger and more emotionally confident. Your self-esteem is building. And when you get it, you practice it, you slide down that hill into the pot of gold, because now you are a whole different person. You love who you are. You have the mindset for success. You're moving forward in life. The past does not impact you anymore. And that's what that is the time where you do create the life you desire and then move on to have the love you deserve. So I encourage you to go for it.
I think that's great. We normally ask for 3 HPTs. You over-delivered with 8. We're going to put all of your links in the show notes for listeners. So check that out. Rihanna, thanks so much for being on. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Brandon, for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Bye, everyone. Mm-hmm.